Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Atyahara Priyashas Cha Prajapo Niyamagraha Jana Sangas Chaloyam Cha Shadir Bhaktir Vinashati Atyahara Priyashas Cha Prajapo Niyamagraha Jana Sangas Chaloyam Cha Shadir Bhaktir Vinashati Atyahara Priyasas Cha Prajapo Niyamagraha Jana Sangas Chaloyam Cha Shadir Bhaktir Vinashati Atyahara, overeating or too much collecting. Priyasa, over-endeavoring. Cha, and. Prajapa, idle talking. Niyama, rules and regulations. Agraha, too much attachment to. Or agraha, too much neglect of. Jana sangha, association with worldly minded persons. Cha, and. Loyam, ardent longing or greed. Cha, and. Shadi, by these six. Bhakti, devotional service. Vinashati is destroyed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One's devotional service is spoiled when he becomes too entangled in the following six activities. 1. Eating more than necessary or collecting more funds than required. 2. Over-endeavoring for mundane things that are very difficult to obtain. 3. Talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters. 4. Practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following them and not for the sake of spiritual advancement. Rejecting the rules and regulations of the scriptures and working independently or whimsically. 5. Associating with worldly-minded persons we're not interested in Krishna consciousness. And 6, being greedy for mundane achievements. So Srila Prabhupada's purport. Prabhupada immediately begins to talk about plain living and high thinking. That is the natural purpose of the human form of life. And then he explains that there are three different energies that the Lord has known as Antaranga Shaktir, Bahiranga Shaktir, and Tatastha Shakti. So Antaranga Shaktir is the Lord's internal energy, the spiritual energy. And Bahiranga Shaktir is the external energy of Krishna, or the illusory energy. And the Tatastha Shakti are the living entities, ourselves, which are situated in between the antaranga, the internal energy, and the bahiranga shakti. So those who are in the material world, they're under the control of the Lord's external energy. But their natural constitutional engagement, Prabhupada quotes from the Bhagavad Gita, is mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakritim ashitya Pajantyananya Manaso Gyatva Bhutadim Avyayam. Mahatmanas tu mam partha daivim prakritim ashritya. So the Mahatmas, those who are great souls, they're under the guidance of the Lord's internal energy, the daivi prakriti. And their engagement is worshipping Krishna. Therefore, the word Mahatma refers to a person who's not cripple-minded, but is a great soul, broad-minded. Cripple-minded means that one has some very limited conception of life. As Prahlad Maharaj points out, Matir Nakrishne Paratakshadova Mito Vipadyeta Griha Vratana. So this Griha means house. So anyone who identifies himself with the body must have a very limited conception of life. As we can see that 99.9% of the people identify themselves with the body. People think it's absurd to identify themselves with anything other than their body. If you tell someone on the street that you're not your body, they become very disturbed. Then who do you think I am? You think I'm a ghost or something in the body? Now, everyone thinks I'm male, female. Even if you tell them they're a spirit soul, they think that has something to do with their body. They think I'm a Belgium spirit soul. So these are all very narrow conceptions. Anyone who's identifying himself with a body, whatever, or any kind of bodily designation, then he remains cripple-minded because his engagement will have to be within the Lord's external energy. Only one who's a Mahatma, who identifies himself as a soul and in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can be considered broad-minded. It doesn't matter whether one extends his cripple-mindedness from his body to his society, to all human beings, all living entities, still one remains limited in his conception. Therefore, anyone who's under the control of the daivi prakriti or the internal pleasure potency of the Supreme Lord, their engagement is to try to satisfy or please Krishna. And everyone else, their engagement is sense gratification, and they're put in under the control of the Lord's spirit energy. And they have to suffer the threefold miseries. Namely, adiatmaka klesha, adibodhika klesha, and adidaivika klesha. Adiatmaka klesha means the misery pertaining to one's body and mind. Anyone who thinks that they're not suffering, they must be a fool. Because most people, they think they're not suffering. Although if you look at them, you can see immediately how much they're suffering. But most people don't realize they're suffering. They think they're enjoying. They think if they can go out on the street and they have some money and look around the shops and hanker for something, that's real enjoyment. They go window shopping. At least according to the statement of most people on the street, they don't have any money. They couldn't possibly be out there trying to buy anything. All they're doing is going from shop to shop, looking in the window and thinking, oh, I wish I had that. Oh, I wish I had that. And then you ask them, sir, you're suffering, hankering so much. They go, I'm not suffering. This is enjoyment. Thinking about all the things I could have and lamenting over all the things I don't have. And as for their body, of course, most people are taking so many drugs that they don't even know they have a body. Just like we were out distributing today. One of the most popular places is the place on this boat where they sell drugs. All the young people go there. So if you want to distribute books in this particular town, the best place to do is to go in front of the boat. But of course, the boatman, he was telling the devotees to go away. he didn't want us to cheat the young people. Cheat them out of their money so they couldn't buy drugs. But the fact is that people are suffering. Their bodies are full of different problems. In America, the most popular drug that even the doctors prescribe is aspirin. That's the number one drug. The number one drug actually the doctors prescribe is placebos, sugar or salt pills. Because most people are so disturbed in their minds that it manifests themselves in the body. They don't really have any disease. It's just an over-disturbance of their mind. So one of our devotee doctors told me that half the medicine he has to prescribe is placebos or sugar pills. And I said, well, why do you do that? Why don't you just tell them that there's nothing wrong? He said, because then they go to another doctor until they find something. Some doctor will tell them that something is wrong. So most people are so disturbed in their minds that they think their body is disturbed. And some people are so disturbed in their bodies, but their minds are so spaced out that they don't even know it. As we know, it takes people a few years before they find out they have some major disease like cancer. In America, I remember they used to, on the television, used to advertise all the symptoms for cancer. Horrible symptoms. They had to advertise it. Otherwise people wouldn't realize that they had them. Or even if they had them, they wouldn't take them seriously. And as far as Adibodhika Klesha goes, miseries from other living entities, you just have to read the newspapers and see how much misery different living entities are causing people. And of course, Adidevaka Klesha, it's very clear that in India, for instance, the monsoons used to come exactly to the day every year. People would know when the monsoons would come, and it would just be so regulated. But Prabhupada said then they stopped worshiping Krishna, and they introduced the worship of Durga by this rascal Ramakrishna. And so, due to the lack of worship of Krishna, worshiping some bogus, of course worshiping Durga is a demigoddess, but she wants people to worship Krishna. So everything became irregulated. And nowadays, no one has any idea when the monsoons are coming. And when they do come, they destroy everything. They just flood the whole. It's just like this year in Mayapur, there were huge floods. Everyone, you heard about the floods? The whole, even our Mayapur temple went underneath the water. And villages, whole villages, so many villages completely got inundated. So it was called Adidevaka Klesha. You know about the floods? Well, it went, I forget how many feet of water, but there were 3 meters of water in some places. The devotees that were taking boats to the Mangalarti. Because actually the floods are, in some respects, they're pretty dangerous. All the snakes, they all start swimming in the water, all the cobras. They all kind of collect in the water. So you don't know whether you're going to step on a pole, an electric pole, or a snake. Either way, you get a big shock. But the real difficulties confronting the living entities are janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, dosha, nudarshana. If one is satisfied suffering adidaivika, adibodhika, and adikleshika miseries, that's still not enough because ultimately one has to die. I met one doctor today on Sankirtan, some lady doctor, and I gave her the book. I thought maybe she was a little interested, and she was looking at it. She said, I can't take the book because I'm afraid of it. I said, what are you afraid of? You're going to die anyhow. I said, "Don't you think you're going to live here in this body forever?" She said, "Well, probably not. But still, you know, we've been taught to be afraid of these books, these alternative things." I said, "What's your alternative? You're going to have to die. This is just telling you the difference between your body and yourself." She said, "I realize that, but still I'm afraid of it. I can't accept it." I said, "Because you're in ignorance. Therefore, because you have no knowledge, therefore, you're afraid. If you read the book, then you'll get over your fear, and you'll feel very happy." She said, "You're probably right, but I can't accept the book." I went on to tell her, I said, "Well, you know, you seem to be on the mental platform." I said, "That's the main problem with the world, being on the mental platform." And now she remained on it, didn't take the book. So the main problems are this old age, disease, and death. People think, just like they think I'm a doctor, I'm going to give someone some antibiotic and I'll cure them. Therefore, I'm doing them the highest good in the material world. But actually, they can't even save themselves, and they're so bewildered that they themselves are fearful. Someone comes up with a little book, and they're afraid. The wealthiest person in the world, one time the devotees went to visit, whose name was Howard Hughes. He was so much afraid of disease that he built a part of his house. It was sterilized. Everything in it was sterilized. And even the food that was sent to him, it was all sterilized. Because he was so afraid that he'd die from some kind of infection, that even the food that was it had to be passed through him through a door after it was sterilized. So he died, of course. I forget what he died of. I think he died from starvation or something. Because he was so afraid to eat that eventually he stopped eating, so he died from malnutrition. And he was the wealthiest person. He was a multi-billionaire. He died from starvation. Our Food for Life truck should have went there and saved him. So still, these are the main problems. But people are thinking that how to solve, they don't think about how to solve these problems. They think that if they can collect as much as they can, that's their main problem. Prabhupada gives the example that by nature's arrangement, that all living entities are provided with enough to survive. Most living entities. And even if there's a scarcity sometimes, that generally it's not due to Mother Nature's lack of supplying, it's due to people's greed. One person will buy up all the resources in a country and then sell it at a high price. Just like America sometimes sends foreign aid overseas. So what happens is that the foreign aid they're sending, the governments say, take them and then they sell them on the market. So if you go to most third world countries, you can buy on the market foreign aid, America's foreign aid. Have cans of it. At a pretty reasonable price. Of course, it was sent to help the poor people. The only people who never get it are the poor people. Because they don't have enough money to buy it. And Prabhupada gives the example that if you put a bag of rice in a place, then the birds will come one after another and take as much rice as they need. But a human being, if he sees the bag of rice, immediately he'll grab it and then store it away. And after it rots, after a few years, when he doesn't like the smell anymore, he'll take it out and then throw it back to the birds. So this is called greed. People are, in the human form of life especially, they have the opportunity to become greedy. So this collecting and eating more than necessary, this is the main reason why people engage in prayasa, or over-endeavoring. Especially this collecting, because how much can you eat? There was one person, he ate a lot. I think he weighed something like 1,500 pounds or something. He was so big that he couldn't get out of his house. He had to stay in his house all the time. Of course, eventually he died. And then they couldn't get him out of his house. That had knocked down the walls of the house in order to get him. So that's called overeating. But most people are guilty of over-collecting. Especially if you go to a place like America, where many people have private houses, and you'll find out, if you go into their houses, it's just full of unnecessary things. They store things in the attic, they add on extra rooms to the house, just to store all their collections. Because especially in modern society, is all based upon collecting propensity. Unless people collect things they don't need, the economy can't go on. As soon as people stop collecting, then they go into recession, and everyone becomes very disturbed. So it's based upon the idea people buy more and more things. Now they have people buy all these different video games, they buy all different types of television sets and stereos, and they're always coming out with something new for people to buy. And especially they aim their advertisement at the children because they're the most receptive, they're least discriminating, just to get them to buy more and more things. So if they even, in America, I don't know if they have it here, they have what's called Torosaurus, huge department stores. They're actually huge buildings with toys in them. You've seen that? It's big as small cities sometimes, just full of toys. Previously, children used to be content using their imagination, but now they don't have any, there's no such thing as imagination. You know, that you can buy a real small little tank for your child. Or whatever there is, they have these train sets, real elaborate train sets, but practically the child can hop on the train and take off for us somewhere. So, this is all part of over-collecting. In America, they have a bumper sticker. It says, they put it on the back of the car, that whoever gets the most toys at the end of life, he wins. So this is the general mentality. Just collect as much as you can, and whoever gets the most at the end of life, he wins. And then after you leave your body, then your children come, and they fight over whatever is in the house, divide it up so they can start, keep on collecting too. Indraduma Maharaj told me that when his mother died, he wrote an offering in the Vyas Pooj book this year about that. He said that his brother and sister, they went to her house and they started to fight over everything. So they became completely inimical towards each other. And the only person they could relate to was Indraduma Maharaj. And that's because he didn't take anything from the house. So they both thought he was their friend. So Prabhupada writes that by God's arrangement, if one can get a little milk and some grains, then his economic problems are solved. I remember one time, the first time I went to New Vrindavan in 1969, I went with, at that time, it was Jagadish Maharaj and Bhagavan Puru and his wife. We went there. New Vrindavan was just starting a few months ago. And it was quite on a very simple property. As a matter of fact, we had to get off 2 miles before because there was no road. And we had to walk through the mud. It was in May at that time, right after the rainy season. And every step that one would take, it would you'd sink into the mud. And for 2 miles, we were walking like that, so I was quite frustrated. And finally, we got to this little house. It was a shack on the property where Prabhupada was staying. And Bhagavan, Prabhu, and myself, we walked up to the attic where Prabhupada was living in. It was a two-story house made out of wood. And Prabhupada was sitting on the bed, and when he looked at us, he smiled and said, "So, how do you like our jungle?" So it was quite a jungle. But I remember I talked to Kirtananda Maharaj at that time. He was living in a little house. It was actually a shack, around 9 feet by 3 feet. And he told us that Prabhupada had said that if we just had a cow and a little land, our whole economic problem would be solved. So I heard this and I couldn't understand what he was talking about, because I was a treasurer. And I was thinking, if we just had a little land and a cow, our whole economic problem in our temple would be solved. So it was very hard for me to relate to it, especially. In any case, Prabhupada says that if we have a little land and a cow, and if you live in the country, of course, not in the city, then your whole economic problem can be solved, provided you're willing to live simply. Many of our farming communities, so-called farming communities, were started with the idea of simple living and high thinking. And they started to raise cows. I remember one of our temples, farms, they produced 300 cows. Because they thought the cows were, and they were selling the milk of the cows. They thought the cow's milk was supposed to support the farm. They thought that's what simple living meant. You just support the cows. You just support the farm through the cows. Unfortunately, on the farm, everyone had a car. And they had their own house. So it's quite expensive. You have to give a lot of milk to buy a car. But to speak of support, you know, everyone having their own house and video and television and everything else. So these poor cows are supposed to do it all. And there's only 300 acres of land also. So eventually it didn't work out. And they blamed it all on Prabhupada's conception of the cow. Simple living and high thinking. And a little land and a cow. But the real problem was that everyone had a car. And everyone wanted to live on the same standard of living that you'd normally live if you were basing on some material industrial society. So many of the people left the farm because they didn't want to so-called live simply. And they didn't think the cows were going to support them in whatever they had. You know, one or two trips to India a year, your car, your house, and everything else. It's all supposed to come out from a quart of milk. And then, of course, even when you had 300 cows, most of them don't give milk. But you have to feed them anyhow, and then they become a burden. And someone has to take care of the cows. There's so many problems. But if one is satisfied with living simply, which comes mostly through hearing and chanting about Krishna, being satisfied with the cultivation of spiritual consciousness, if one goes to India, all over India, especially in the villages, one can see examples of simple living and high thinking. Or at least simple living. I don't know about high thinking anymore. In Vrindavan, you see that most people have one or two cows, and they grow some grains on their fields, And that's how they live. They have these, they make these rotis, these thick chapatis, and they have a little sabji sometimes. And that's it. And they get some milk from the cows, and they have some, make some milk or some dahi. And they live like that. They're quite happy. And the devotees who go on Vrajamandala Parikrama, they'll find out that people can go, the devotees can go and do madhukara, house to house, and people very happily give you a chapati or two. A roti and some, you know, sometimes some cheese or something. So Prabhupada says that human form of life is meant for this, because by such simple living, one can actually spend his time for God consciousness, cultivating God consciousness. And Prabhupada quotes, Dharmasi hiya pavargasya narto yasya upakalpate nartasya dharmai kantasya kamos lavayahi smritaha. That all occupational engagements, dharma, are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be engaged in the ultimate occupational for material gain. Furthermore, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service, dharma, should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Sovana and ashram is the first step in human society. And by such varna and ashram, but the occupational duties, all based upon more or less simple living, narrowing down the occupations to the main occupation is raising food. And the second main occupation is protecting the persons who are raising food. And the third main occupation is cultivating knowledge for higher consciousness, ultimately leading to liberation. So these are the main occupations. Unfortunately, in present society, they've created so many occupations, needless occupations, all based upon supporting illusory sense gratification. Now, in order to make a living, you have to have some technical occupation. One is no longer a house cleaner, one is a domestic engineer. One is no longer just, no one can be a biologist, they have to be a physico-chemical biologist who's dealing with radioactive isotopes, dealing with subatomic particles, their effects on the microbes in rats. They have their PhD in that. So they have so many occupations, and they're all aimed at supporting the complications in current society. And ultimately, if you look at it, what are they all aimed at? So that people just don't eat ordinary food from the field anymore. It's some processed food, you know, that someone has invented through their chemical wizardry. So it bears little resemblance to food anymore. As I said, like one time, they did an experiment, and they fed in the box these kind of like, what do they call it? These wheat flakes? Yeah, they're corn flakes. So they fed these rats corn flakes in a box. And the rats, because they're more intelligent, they ate the box and they left the corn flakes. Unfortunately, most people are not so intelligent. So. They actually pay money for the cornflakes rather than the box. Actually, the real nutrition is in the box. But real occupation is meant to get the basic necessity is food. So that is in the Varna and Ashram system, and by such engagement of the human beings in the Varna and Ashram system, their basic material necessities can be solved, and so they can cultivate higher values of life coming under the heading of religion. Unfortunately, people don't realize that, and they think that religion is meant to get bread for them. They're too lazy to go out and work in the field to get the bread, so they hope that religion will give bread to them. They go to the church, those who do, and if they pray for anything, they go, as Prabhupada says, God, give me my daily bread. Even the birds, they're more sophisticated than that. They don't go to church and pray for bread, because they have more faith in human beings that God will give them their daily bread. They don't have to pray for it. And indeed, we find that the birds, they have no problem getting their daily bread. So Prabhupada writes that we do require some economic necessity. Jivasya tattva jignasya. But the real purpose of life is to inquire about the absolute truth. Therefore, priyasas, or over-endeavoring simply to acquire more and more material goods, is a waste of time. That one should conserve his energy, try to get what's necessary to maintain the body, but at the same time try to cultivate spiritual knowledge. So this atyahara, or collecting and eating more than necessary, leads to priyasas. Another impediment is prajalpa, which we'll go over when we start again. But prajalpa is unnecessary talking. Especially modern society has very expertly cultivated prajalpa, that people have so many topics to talk about. Especially, I think people talk about either the weather or their favorite sports team. That's them. Of course, when they meet each other in the street, they go, "How are you?" And they go, "I'm fine. How are you?" "I'm fine also." And if they know themselves a little bit more, then they go, "How are you?" "I'm miserable. So-and-so died yesterday." Just like my parents. Whenever I write to them, whenever they write to me, they always send me a list of who died, who's in the hospital, who got divorced, etc., etc. And then at the end of the letter, they go, "Well, I don't know why you're still in the Hare Krishna movement. Why don't you do something to have a good time sometime?" Like all my relatives were dying in the hospital. So this all goes under the prajalpa. People are, if you turn on television, it's just one prajalpa after another. On the radio, people talking about useless, as probably said, social, economic problems. In Western country, old men retire from active service, active life. They play cards, fish, watch television, and debate over useless social political schemes. So these are all under the category of prajalpa. One time Brahma was walking by the ocean, and one man came up to him with a fish. He just caught it. And he said, "Sir, would you like this fish?" He said, "No, you take it." And Prabhupada goes, "No, you take it and enjoy." And then he turned to the devotees when the man was out of sight, "And suffer." So I think we'll stop there. Are there any questions? Right, it's all under extended sense gratification. If you claim, "I'm doing this to satisfy my senses," everyone will criticize you. But if you claim you're doing it to satisfy other people's senses, then they think you're very noble. Why does this man steal? Because he's doing it to satisfy his family. Oh, well, then it's not so bad. But it's all under the realm of sense gratification. Just like What is the king? The king is simply the biggest householder in the kingdom. So one man, he may be trying to satisfy his family senses, and the king or the leader of the society, he's trying to satisfy everyone's senses. But the business is the same, simply sense gratification. Of course, we're not opposed to sense gratification. To some extent, it's necessary. But if it's the only goal of life, the only objective, then one is wasting his life. Because in any species of life, even the lion and the tiger, they work hard to satisfy their cubs. Even there, they have family affection. So it's not that only human society people are working to satisfy their family. Every species of life, they do that. Unfortunately, even so-called human beings, they're even losing that idea of extended sense gratification. They become so degraded that they can't even think of extending their sense gratification. If a person, nowadays, at least in the Western world, most people, the only thing they can give their love to is their cat or dog. They can't even live with other people. They figure my cat at least loves me, or my dog. He's the only person who smiles when he sees me. Everyone else looks morose. Anything else? Therefore, people hear that someone has killed a dog or hit a dog, they become very disturbed. They think, this is horrible. But every day they kill so many children, babies, they kill so many animals, the cows. People think, oh, that's normal. But if you hit a dog, they become very disturbed. You're arrested immediately. You can kill as many children as you want, kill as many cows as you want, but don't hit a dog. So this is how degraded human society is. They think they're killing children because there's overpopulation, but have as many dogs as you want. They dress them up in clothing. They kiss the dog, etc. So it's not very auspicious. In New York, you see people with these poopy scoopers. You see that? People walk around with these poopy, because if the dog passed a stool on the street, you have to scoop it up. So people walk with their dog, and on the other hand, they have these poopy scoopers. So they're so surrendered to the dog that they're willing to pick up its stool after it. They're less than the garbage man. Garbage man would never pick up stool. But these people walking around, they pray to the dog, please pass your stool. They very faithfully pick it up. And they think they're quite sophisticated. They think they're gentlemen of the city. You see these people with these fancy clothes on, ties and expensive suits, drive up in their Rolls Royces, the dog gets out past the stool, and the man is scooping up. And they think they're heroes. They've done their good deed for the day. Any questions? Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantharashi, Nectar of Instruction, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.